everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. It is our Friday edition. Tom Fairbanks is engineering the show today. Tom has picked out some outstanding bump music. On Friday, we do kind of the 60s bump music. And today, the group will be the Hollies. Something tells me that Bus Stop will be somewhere in the mix today. Oh, yeah. Oh, be number one on the bump music list. It is Friday. It is the 3rd of April, 2015. It's Good Friday, 2015. Hope you're having a good day and looking forward to a splendid Easter weekend. We are live each weekday, noon to 1 on AM 1030 KVOI. Tucson's Voice. We stream the show and podcast it for you. So really, you can listen anywhere in the world at on your leisure at buckmastershow.com. We also live stream at kvoi.com. Our media partners, Friday, we like to do a big shout-out to our media friends. TucsonSentinel.com supports the program. Inside Tucson Business, the Green Valley News, and Sarita Sun, and TucsonLifestyle.com. Our Friday Focus interview today, Jim Small is joining us, the editor of the Arizona Capital Times. He's on the live line from Phoenix. Joining me in studio, Tim Steller is here. Tim, columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Dan Scheer is also here, editor of the Green Valley News and Sarita Sun. The live line is 790-2040. If you'd like to call in and ask a question or have a comment about the legislative process, which just wrapped up, give us a call. The Facebook page is Bill Buckmaster. Let's go now to Jim Small. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing?
Doing well. Tell me, Jim, the question that comes to mind is, why on earth did we have to hurry this thing up? What was the point of getting this legislative session coming in, really the shortest session since 1968? What did the leaders of the legislature tell you what the hurry was?
I think that there was really just an appetite that began with Governor Ducey, and it was certainly one that I think that was generally shared by lawmakers, that they didn't want to have a long, drawn-out session. I think it really did start, though, with the governor. You know, this was his first session. As governor, I think he wanted to set a tone of working together and working in an efficient manner and in a way that generally kept Arizona out of the headlines, at least for negative reasons, as has often been the case on the national level over the past, you know, 5 or 10 years. And I think that that was really priority number one for him when it came to this session, was minimize the amount of, you know, quote-unquote crazy or controversial bills and move through quickly, because the reality is that the shorter the session is, the less likely there is to be any of those bills that he didn't want to deal with or that he didn't want to be a distraction on the issues at hand. And that was why the budget got done so quickly. Budget got done in about 55 days, which is got to be it's a modern era record for sure. And once the budget was done, it really pulled that. That's the biggest roadblock to ending a session. So it took him about almost another month, I think about 26 days, 25 days or so to get done with the rest of session. And, you know, the result is an 81-day session that, as you said, the shortest session since before man walked on the moon.
Wow. Well, you know, before I turn it over to Tim and to Dan, just a quick follow-up to that. It used to be the only reason you do these all-night sessions. I can remember some of those year after year back in the 90s, early 2000s, when the session would go actually up to the end of the fiscal year. I mean, is it really doing the job of the people to legislate and pass legislation in the middle of the night? It just something feels funny to me about it, Jim.
Well, you know, it's a complicated answer. I mean, is it the best way to do it? No, probably not. But there is kind of a sense of once they decide that they're going to go for a sign you die, that they're going to work until they get it done, and they're going to at a certain point there's a consensus that's reached among the majority party that okay, we've gone as far as we're going to go. Now we're going to stop, and we're going to let the bills that are still on the vine. You know what? They're not going to get harvested. They're going to die, and we're going to walk away from them, and people can come back next year and try again. It's always different as to where they draw that line. they didn't have to finish this week. There's certainly nothing forcing them to finish this week. And realistically, there was no reason they needed to go until 3:40 in the morning last night. and not just out of, you know, the idea of good governance. I mean, logistically, they didn't need to. The reason this went long was because House Speaker David Gowen was really, I guess, gumming up the works. I mean, he was fighting and pushing very hard for a couple of priorities for him and things that he wanted to get done, pet projects that were stalled in the Senate, and that was what held up this entire thing. They went 9 hours. I mean, you got to understand, they went 9 hours on the House floor without doing anything.
Here's Tim Steller, the Star.
Hey, Jim. So can you step back and just kind of walk us through how that happened last night? So you're saying that David Gowen wanted a couple priorities taken care of, and what did that lead to? Can you kind of take us step by step?
Yeah, what it led to was essentially there was one bill in particular that got defeated in the Senate yesterday morning. It was a bill that had to deal with pawnbrokers, would have removed a fee that pawnbrokers are forced to pay to local governments when they buy gold from somebody. And that money goes to help to fund programs to essentially ensure law enforcement can work with pawnbrokers to keep stolen goods out of pawn shops. And there's a bill to get rid of that program and that fee. Bill died. It was a pet project for Speaker Gowen. He and his staff and his leadership team were doing a full court press, and they essentially told people, look, we're going to hold up everything until that bill passes. The bill never passed, and so the result was that you had the House not going on the floor and acting on bills. The Senate did. The Senate acted on everything that it was going to act on, sent everything to the House, was in a position where it was waiting for bills to come back from the House. There were a number of Senate bills that the House just had to vote on, send back to the Senate, either so the Senate could just transmit them to the governor, or so the Senate could have a final vote on amendments that the House made. Those never came. After about 9 hours, they'd only gotten a single bill, and it was a really trivial bill. And at that point, it was about 1 o'clock in the morning. And at that point, the Senate said, "Okay, you know what? We're done. We're not going to play this game anymore. We're gonna leave." And they made the motion to end the session for the year. They sent all their people home, except for the ones that absolutely needed to be there. And they basically told the House, okay, guess what? You guys are going to be done now because we're done. And we're going to walk away. And it took about an hour, hour and a half before the House finally came to the conclusion and understood that that's the way it was going to work and that there was nothing they could do to change that. And at that point, it really just came down to, okay, there's about five or six bills that needed to be voted on. They voted on them. They got them out. They sent them over to the Senate, and they decided to go ahead and throw in the towel. And the session ultimately shut down at 3:37 in the morning.
Here's Dan Scheer of the Green Valley News. Dan?
Jim, you mentioned crazy and controversial bills, but do you think the Senate recognized that there are crazy and controversial legislators, and they just said, we're done? Were they trying to send a message? And is this common that it happens this way?
There's always squabbles and fights over pet projects at the on that last day. The last day or two, it's a cavalcade of lawmakers up and down, rank and file and leadership, cutting deals to try to get their bill through. It's tough for a lawmaker who works all year long on a piece of legislation to get it down to the one-yard line only to have it die. And so there's a lot of horse trading that happens. People who say, look, I'll help get your bill. I'll help, you know, break your bill free if you'll help break mine free. And so they go through that whole thing. Leadership's in a unique position. They can actually stop the process. They control how fast or slow things goes, and that's what was going on with David Gowen. I don't know that it was so much for the Senate not wanting to deal with controversial lawmakers or anything like that, as much as it was just a difference in opinion of when things should end, of how it should end, and really I think just better management and better organization, and some of that is certainly, I'm sure, due to the fact that this is David Gowen's first time as Speaker. This is Amy Biggs's third session as President. There's some seasoning there that the Speaker, through no fault of his own, just does not have in terms of running the chamber. But really, it did come down to this very intensive last minute 11th hour kind of push for just a couple of bills. And a decision in the House to go ahead and throw up roadblocks on everything that the Senate wanted to do in an effort to try to force them to play ball, and the Senate decided to take the ball and go home.
And do you think, and that's going to be my next question regarding David Gowen, so you don't think this is going to make him look bad?
Oh, I mean, Yeah, sure. I mean, it does, but it does to who? I mean, to the folks who had to be there till 3:30 in the morning. Okay, yeah. You know, lobbyists, those who make their living, ply their trade down at the state capitol. Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people aren't terribly happy about it, and probably think it reflects poorly on him. But I mean, to the general public, I mean, this is at the end of the day kind of some inside baseball stuff. I mean, whether they got done at 11 o'clock last night or at 3 in the morning. The reality is most people went to bed last night knowing the legislature was going to be ending, and they woke up this morning and it was over, and, you know, the timing of it doesn't make a whole lot of difference.
Jim, Tim here. So you mentioned David Gowen's performance last night, but when you look at it, take a longer view of his first term as House Speaker, how did things go? What was he known for? What were his characteristics as a Southern Arizona Speaker for the first time in decades?
You know, I think for the most part, he certainly had a reputation, and a lot of it he built up from before he got into the legislature in those first couple campaigns of being someone who was, you know, an ideologue and you know, rigidly inflexible on policy and ideas. And I think the reality is that's not really the way he has managed and the way that he's governed and the way he's acted as a legislator. He has a reputation of being somewhat of a consensus builder, believe it or not. And I think that for the most part that was true this year. You know, he did, I think, generally take a back seat to President Biggs. I think you saw a lot of the things that happened this year happened because Biggs wanted them to happen, or Biggs spearheaded them. And I think what we saw at the end here was David Gowen trying to do the same thing and trying to flex some of those muscles that are afforded to the leader of a chamber, and failing to do so. And maybe doing so a little bit inelegantly. On the whole, I mean, I think his first session as speaker was fine. I mean, the last night may have been something of a mini meltdown, but on the whole, I mean, I think things went well. That the House was generally run pretty smoothly. There weren't a whole lot of there weren't really any snafus along the way or any kind of, you know, major hiccups.
All right, Jim, we're going to take a break right here, and then we'll come back and talk about what was accomplished and what perhaps wasn't. Jim Small is with us, the editor of the Arizona Capital Times. Jim, were you up till 3:30 in the morning?
I was. I was able to catch a brief nap from about midnight to about 1:30, and at that point I was up until they were done, and then up until about 4:30.
That's dedication for you. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show.
Bus stop, wet day, she's there, I say, reshell my umbrella. Bus stop, bus go, she stays, love grows under my umbrella. All that summer we enjoyed it.
Hey honey, welcome home. How was your trip to L.A.?
Flying out of Tucson was the way to go. I got 3 whole days of FaceTime with the board, and they liked the fact that I saved the company time and money by flying out of TIA.
Oh, honey, that's great. Sounds like your career is really taking off.
You bet. With so many daily flights to L.A., I can get there in no time at all.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Attending Pima Community College means success for you and your family at less than a quarter the cost of trade schools or four-year universities. Partnering with business leaders, Pima creates programs tailored to help you succeed in today's high-demand jobs and offers two-year associate degrees that transfer to universities nationwide. Whether your goal is a new career or transferring to a four-year college, Pima Community College can help you succeed. Call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu. The Regional Transportation Authority has completed more than 570 projects to date. Our projects range from new roadway lanes to new transit services, plus new sidewalks and bike lanes. The Regional Transportation Authority also funds crosswalks for added pedestrian safety and new signal technology to keep people and goods moving. We're improving safety and regional mobility for you. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Hi, wouldn't you like a voice like mine talking about your business? Saying things like, thank you for calling, or press 1 for hours and directions. Well, it can. Cox Business offers Voice Manager, allowing you to get a professional voice to record your voicemail greeting. And with my voice, you'll need to warn whoever manages your lead gen data, because your customer base is about to expand. If you don't like my voice...
There's always mine.
Thank you for calling. All our customers are important to us.
How do you like that?
I think mine might be more appropriate.
You don't know that.
I can do fancy accents.
As good as this.
Make a great impression before you answer the phone. Cox Business Internet and Voice Manager is only $84 a month for the first 6 months with a 3-year agreement. Plus, get a $150 Visa prepaid card after online redemption. Bundle and save today. Visit coxbusiness.com. Ends 5/3/15. Includes Cox Business Internet 10 and Voice Manager Essential. Excludes taxes and fees. Visit coxbusiness.com for details. Actual speeds vary. Other restrictions apply.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Friday Focus interview today. Jim Small is our featured guest today, and we thank Jim. He was up really late, of course. Jim is the editor of the Arizona Capital Times, up late as the session adjourned in Phoenix. It was pushing toward 4 in the morning, and I appreciate Jim filling in for the Senate President. Andy Biggs was scheduled to be our guest, but I guess he was just pretty much too wiped out to come on the radio, so I do appreciate it, Jim. Dan Scheer is here from the Green Valley News and Sarita Sun. Dan is the editor there. Tim Steller is here from the Arizona Daily Star. Tim is the well-known columnist for the Star. What was accomplished? What were kind of the marquee items that were accomplished, and what were the items that really kind of got left in the dustbin, Jim?
I think the biggest thing that got accomplished was the legislature sent to Governor Ducey some legislation that will allow for a federally an identification card to be issued by the state that meets federal guidelines. It'll basically comply with the base elements of the 2005 Federal Real ID Act. And the reason this is important is because beginning in January, an ID that complies with these federal guidelines is going to be required to board any commercial airline, whether it's a domestic flight, and also to get into any federal building. So, you know, anyone who needs to go to the federal courthouse, for instance, is going to need to have one of these IDs in order to be admitted entry. Or, if you don't have one, and most Arizonans will not, they're going to have like a passport, for instance, would be another accepted identification. So this legislation allows the state's Department of Motor Vehicles to issue to issue these kinds of IDs, to design and issue them, to only to people who request them. But I think it's a step, and we'll ultimately see these IDs, I think, expanded to everybody. But this was something that Speaker Gowan was opposed to, that he had been refusing for a long time to let come to the floor. Yesterday, that logjam did break, and they ultimately did put up a bill, and it got approved by the House, and it is now on the governor's desk.
Jim, this is Tim again. Do you have any idea how this, how Arizona handled it, how that differs from how other states handled this problem? That is, did other states simply reissue new IDs, or did they give this option? Do you know?
Most other states have complied. I think Arizona was one of maybe, I want to say, 10 states or so that hadn't complied with the Real ID Act. And most other states just incorporated it as their new ID, their new identification card. Arizona, I think, is kind of treading some new ground in terms of having it be an optional ID, something that you have to specifically request. But I think that that's just kind of that's the first kind of the camel's nose under the tent on this. And I think that within the next couple of years, we'll probably see that expanded. Would be my guess to include everybody. That way, everyone is able to get a new identification card, or will through the normal course of renewals, will get one of the new cards. And we'll be able to board flights. I mean, I think that there's going to have to be an education process, because there's still no doubt going to be a lot of people who are really angry when they show up at the airport to try to take a flight to, say, L.A. or New York or Vegas, and are told, well, gee, you need to have a passport. No, you don't have one with you? Sorry, you can't board your flight.
It strikes me that probably it's going to take getting State Senator John Kavanaugh to miss a flight because he doesn't have a real ID. Well, it seems like when he runs into a problem, then he turns that into a bill and a law, you know?
He's got that reputation. He is absolutely, I think, the poster child for legislator who uses his capacity as a lawmaker to solve his personal annoyances.
All right, here's Dan Scheer, and we've got a couple of calls, too, so we may keep you over a little bit past 12:30 into our Friday roundtable segment, Jim, just a heads up, okay? Okay, Dan Scheer.
Jim, the governor's calling this a bipartisan budget. Do you think that's accurate, the word bipartisan?
Yeah, technically, sure it is. They got one Democrat to vote for it, so yeah.
Okay.
It is, by the dictionary definition, yeah, it's accurate.
So if I'm a Democrat in the legislature, did I even need to show up the last 3 months?
If you're a Democrat in the legislature, I think you could argue that they barely showed up the first 3 months of the session, to be honest with you. I mean, it was Democrats obviously are in the minority, and with being in the minority comes being on the losing end of most of the big issues. I think the Democrats were pretty darn ineffective and ineffectual at the Capitol this year. They didn't do much. They didn't pose much of. They didn't put up much opposition to a lot of things. I mean, they just kind of showed up. They dutifully voted no on things, and then they went home. And
all right.
And you know that was kind of the way it worked. They were certainly cut out of a lot. I mean, they didn't have much of a chance to have any input on the budget. Frankly, neither did anyone who wasn't in Republican leadership. Didn't have much of a chance to give input.
Sorry there, Jim. Matthew is waiting to speak with Jim Small of the Capital Times. Go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, hey, Jim. It was able to be live streamed, so I was able to watch it till the end, off and on.
Oh, my goodness.
And enjoyed
poor
the
man,
comments
Matthew.
From the legislator on Twitter as they ended what I refer to as the zombie
zombie session.
Gowan legislative agenda. The Clean Elections Commission, it seemed like there at the end, there were a couple attempts to bring that situation up. I couldn't understand it. It was happening so fast, going from, you know, trying to figure out what they were bringing up. It's hard to see on live stream. Could you talk about the Clean Elections Commission? Was that successfully fought back? Doing away with it? And the other thing was, how would you, Chad Campbell was a very effective person to, at least, even though he was in the minority, he seemed to lead the Democrats in a good public campaign. Do you think that the minority leader has been, Dr. Meyer, has been effective? Or are you hearing rumors that next session that he maybe replaced because he's no Chad Campbell?
Okay.
We've heard nothing about any kind of replacing of Democratic leadership. Certainly, Eric Meyer, the Democratic leader in the House, has a completely different style than Chad Campbell, and we have heard that there have been people who have grumbled about that style and about how effective it is. I think that there are a lot of people who feel that when it comes to standing up for the Democrats and maybe advocating that. The assistant leader, Bruce Wheeler from Tucson, was a far more took on that role better. But I don't think that means that there's going to be any kind of push to get Eric Meyer out of the leadership role. As to the first part, the clean elections thing, there was a measure that would have asked voters to repeal the Clean Elections Act and divert the money into K-12 education. It came up in the wee hours of the morning. It was one of the last bills they dealt with. early this morning, it failed. The House rejected it. They were only able to get 29 votes. They needed 31. There were two people who were likely yes votes who were not there, who, because the session had dragged on so long, had gone home for the night. So it's possible, had they voted on that at 6 o'clock in the evening, we could have a different result on that. But as it stands now, that bill failed. I'm sure it will come back next year, and we'll be having the same discussion all over again.
Tim Steller wrote about this on Wednesday, right, in Tim's column, about that amendment, kind of, we call it, left for want of another term, a kind of a gag order amendment that came up that would be would really, in effect, not allow superintendents of school superintendent. We had Calvin Baker from Vail on the show that day on Wednesday after Tim's column, and he said that if that had passed, he would no longer be able to speak out at all about any kind of politics or any education matters that had any political connotation. But I assume that failed.
It did. After the uproar, the bill really took on a different kind of a different tone after the House amended it, to do what the superintendent was talking about, and really kind of put a more chilling restriction on of speech on not just superintendents but also teachers. I mean, anyone who works for a school district would have been impacted by this, and there was, the way it was written, you could have read it to say that essentially that they couldn't have any kind of, make any kind of public political stand on an issue, which would, I think, be a First Amendment problem in and of itself. But that bill, after that amendment happened, the education groups really kind of sounded the alarm. There were there was a lot of opposition, a lot of contact between education groups and teachers and their legislators. That bill never came up for a final vote at all. So it's among the things that got left in the on the cutting room floor when they went home.
Okay, it's 12:30. I'm going to, Tom, a little housekeeping matter here. We'll carry over the interview with Jim for another 5 minutes. We'll take our break at 12:35. Then we'll come back and we'll do our abbreviated kind of Friday roundtable. But this is kind of the big news of the day, certainly. So let's keep it here. Dan, you haven't jumped in here. Be your final opportunity with Jim today.
Yeah, Jim, the governor eliminated the Department of Weights and Measures. Now, a year ago, we saw Governor Brewer abolish Child Protective Services, but she replaced it with Child Safety and Family Services. How big a deal is this that he just did away with this department?
Well, I think it was something that really came out of left field for a lot of the groups and the businesses that work alongside the Department of Weights and Measures and work with them and that are regulated by them. I think a lot of them didn't see this kind of an idea coming. We'd heard some rumblings about it back in January, and then nothing happened. It didn't show up in the governor's State of the State speech, and it didn't show up in the budget. And so it kind of, most people thought, okay, well, it's not going to happen. And then at the last minute, right before the deadline to hear bills in committee, the idea popped up. It is an elimination of an agency, but it is not, however, an elimination of what the agency did. So basically what they're doing is taking the Department of Weights and Measures, and they are splitting it up into, I want to say, four pieces and sending it out to different state agencies. So those jobs will still be done. Gas tanks, gas pumps will still be checked to make sure that they're dispensing the right amount of gas. Scales at grocery stores will still be checked to make sure that they're accurate. Scanners at your retail outlet will still be checked to make sure that when they scan, a pair of pants, that the right price comes up. That kind of thing. It's all still going to happen. It's just kind of scattered into the wind a little bit more. So I think it's going to force people, these different stakeholder business groups to deal with a new agency and a new bureaucracy.
Does it save money?
Ostensibly, not a whole lot. It's going to save a little bit because you're not going to have a director for that agency now. So, some of the top-level administration for that agency is going to go away. But in terms of the people that are actually doing the jobs, I mean, they're all going to be transferred to new agencies, and they're all still going to be able to do their jobs.
Okay, Tim Steller, one final question for Jim Small.
Jim, I've been arguing down here for a few months that the state needs to raise revenue along with cutting spending. And that could come in a variety of forms, including cutting sales tax exemptions or increasing income taxes, whatever. Is there any chance that the state is ever going to make a move toward raising more revenue as opposed to just cutting spending again and again?
Probably not. I that was certainly a campaign promise of Governor Ducey. If things go really bad and we have another precipitous drop off in state revenue collections, you know, if we see that 30% drop like we did in 2009. I would never say never, but I'd say it is a slim to none chance that organically this legislature, this governor are going to make that kind of are going to push that kind of a policy.
Okay.
Whether voters come back and do it, that's a different issue.
Jim Small, thank you very much for spending some time with us. Now you can go get some rest. Jim, thanks.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot, guys.
Okay, Jim Small talking about what has been referred to by Matthew as kind of a zombie legislature. Well, maybe that should have been our 60s group bump music, but certainly something to think about. Maybe we'll do the zombies next Friday, but right now it's the it's the Hollies. Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Vero Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Vero Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary works to end the senseless abuse of horses and burros so these noble creatures can live free of pain and suffering. Its ranch in Amado is home to dozens of rescued equines who receive special care as they await new, loving homes. Won't you help? Visit equinevoices.org. Equine Voices, a voice for all equines who cannot speak for themselves.
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from Emil Franzi, Phil Richardson, and other top national columnists. Plus, Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garver on movies, Rebecca Guthrie on books, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage, too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com. Published Mondays and Thursdays. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
Water, our most precious resource. Without it, living here in Tucson and the rest of the desert Southwest would not be possible. Where does our water come from? How can we use it more sustainably? At the University of Arizona Biosphere 2, we study the interplay of rain, climate, and landscape. Dive into the ways we use water this April for Earth Month activities at Biosphere 2 and find us online at biosphere2.org. This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Monday on The Buckmaster Show, the Monday Political Face-Off will feature commentators Bruce Ash and Paul Eckerstrom, plus our monthly conversation with former United States Army Chief of Staff General John Wickham Jr. Buckmaster, noon to one each weekday on AM 1030 KVOI The Voice, and always on BuckmasterShow.com. All right, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. That's the music of the Hollies. A little known, Tom Fairbanks, a little known hit, but I know you did grab that off of their top hits, but I don't remember that one at all. Anyway, the Hollies are 60s bump music. Tim Stiller is here. Tim is a columnist for the Arizona Daily Star, Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and Sahurita Sun. It is our Friday roundtable. When you think about this session, Dan Scheer, it seems like anything to do with federal government, and we should all be very cautious of really any government needs to have a watchdog, but I don't know if the legislature is that watchdog.
Yeah, that's you know, I still think the legislature, and maybe it was demonstrated a little bit more over the last 3 months, but they're really out of touch with the constituents, and most of us just want to have, you know, safe communities and decent roads and not too many oppressive laws. They are content to fight with each other, and I think that a short legislative session was a blessing and merciful, frankly.
Absolutely.
And I think Jim brought up some really good points earlier.
What do you think?
Oh, yeah. It was, I mean, the bill that I recall that always comes up about the federal government is the one requiring federal law enforcement agents to check in with the county sheriff before doing any investigative action within the county. I mean, come on.
You know, one thing I didn't have a chance to ask Jim Small about, that new ID, the real ID, does this mean I have to go now over to DMV, or what's the process?
Yeah, you have to request it, as he was saying, and that's kind of the interesting thing about Arizona.
That's going to discourage a lot of people if they've got to go to DMV.
And roughly about a third of Americans have passports, and I don't know if the passport card would work. It doesn't work on planes going to Mexico, so it probably wouldn't work on one, in a domestic flight or anything. So, this is a strange thing, but I'll tell you what, Bill, this is a good time to throw out in case it ever shows up on the ballot again, but I really think we need to be paying our state legislators a whole lot more money because we'd get a whole lot better quality of people. And I know there's an argument for and against that, but $24,000 a year, I think, is what they get.
Yeah.
This is, that's rough to live on. I know it's a part-time job, but that's tough. For $24,000, you don't get much, and we've seen that.
The sacrifice, I mean, I don't want to, you know, feel too bad for him. There's a lot of benefits that come with being a legislator, but man, it's especially when so many from the Tucson area are Democrats. You know, it's a lot you're sacrificing to achieve very little or almost nothing.
Do you have to take the driver's test again? Tom was asking that on the other side of the glass. He just sent me a message. He's hoping.
Well, it has nothing to do with driving, so I assume you can just request it and have your picture taken, and that's it.
And then go down to get the new thing going. Arizona's disappearing Democratic Party. That was a Rob column that I wanted to quickly talk about. Guy's impressions on that, Dan Scheer?
Well, you know, if I lived in the middle of the Phoenix area, I would probably have said, yeah, he's exactly right, but I don't. I live down here, and I can see that the Democrats are very well organized in at least down where I am, Green Valley, Sahurita. In Santa Cruz County, the Republicans are just a disaster as far as how they're organized or not organized. So I'm not seeing it as clearly as him, but what he was talking about in that column was statewide races, and he's absolutely right, and we can see the proof in the elections.
Sure. So this last election, there was a kind of a couple phenomena that came together. One was the Democrats' increasing penchant to discourage primary races and have just one candidate, which is done in part so that they can save money and not spend it fighting each other and just spend it on fighting the Republican. But it really seems to rob them seasoning and publicity for the general election. And then also it was an off-year election in which Democrats just didn't show up. So it, while he may be right about the way the trends look, things change so quickly from every 2 years. I would not be surprised to see things swing back into Democrats' direction in 2016.
I think you have a real good point about that whole primary thing too. I interviewed Fred Duvall probably 8 months before, the election, and then basically he disappears off the map for a long time, and he's one who could have used some of the seasoning.
Absolutely.
A couple of items out of Green Valley. Green Valley Where to Retire magazine, which is kind of the Bible of the retirement industry, and Green Valley, of course, one of their marquee items.
Definitely.
Enjoying a wonderful later years. So were they kind to Green Valley?
Yeah, in years past, they voted Green Valley as the best place to retire, with certain qualifications. But what we did is we called them and we said, okay, how do you decide what's a great place to retire, mm-hmm. and what are our problems or our strengths down in Green Valley? And they interviewed thousands of people and they came up with 18 areas that are important. And number one is low crime. Number two is active, clean, safe downtown, mm-hmm. and which we don't have a downtown.
Yeah, that was
but number three is good hospitals, and we're about to open one. So we hit on a lot of them. Our problem is that we are in a community that is now 50 years old, and even though the buildings are kept up well, they mm-hmm. still look tired. And so you drive through, and some of these buildings just look tired. But it's a beautiful, clean community, and Arizona still is number two behind Florida as far as where to retire for people. But Arizona and Florida are by far leading the pack.
And looking tired, Tim Steller, is Grant Road. I mean, I have done everything possible to avoid driving on Grant. Now they're going to lay down some pavement that they have to do even before they can get a widening project down. They've got to make that road, bring it up to just, acceptable standard.
Absolutely, yeah. So this is a project that they had hoped not to have to do, but it's going to take... Oh, it's scheduled to take around 10 years, a little short of that, I think, to do the widening. And in the meantime, we all know that it is a disaster. It's the worst road in Tucson, probably, and it's embarrassing for a major road within our city. And so, yeah, I was down there. I had to take a quick look on April 2nd just to be sure it wasn't an April Fool's joke that they were going to start repaving.
Well, everybody talks about consensus. Tucson is really the home of where you have to get everybody. All the stakeholders have to get together.
Do you agree with that? Is Tucson the home of consensus? Or do you not concede to that? Can we come to consensus on this?
Yes.
But when we do
something here, where I come from in Cook County and in Chicago, the Mayor Daley would have just, he'd call a news conference the day after they broke the ground on some project.
Right.
That's just the way it worked in Chicago. But here, stuff is talked about. Well, this time, I have to hand it to the people that got together with the Broadway, the widening, the controversial Battle of Broadway. They actually did come to consensus, and it looks like all the stakeholders are somewhat happy with this.
Yeah, it is. I'm being too optimistic, but I have the sense that the NIMBYism of the past has slightly shifted toward more pragmatic approach in Tucson, and that this may be an example of people actually realizing that change does have to happen, but that you can influence how the change occurs.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's been evident not just in Broadway, but I think the university area to some extent, and also where some of those towers are being planned, and also up at Grant Road.
You're talking about Green Valley not having a downtown. What do you consider the center? Where do people actually – is there anything that kind of becomes a de facto downtown?
Yeah, a town square.
Town square in Green Valley?
It depends on where you are. For some, it's a coffee shop. But remember, Green Valley also has 13 rec centers.
Right,
so
right.
That's a big part of a Green Valley recreation. So it depends on where you are in life.
Well, yeah, it could be one of the Walgreens or one of the CVSs, right?
Yeah,
which is going to take the title.
We're not that desperate.
Wrap wrap it up, the Titan Missile Museum attendance is way up down there in Green Valley area.
Yeah, what happened was we'd gotten a tip that their attendance was up, so we decided to look at all Southern Arizona attractions, and the Titan Missile Museum is doing terrific, up 13% from last year. We talked to Dan Gibson over at Visit Tucson, and they expected a dip in hotel nights at, the first year after Accenture Match Play went away, but they actually saw the opposite. And then we talked to the State Office of Tourism that said visitor spending in Pima County has exceeded pre-recession levels. Karchner Caverns is up 20%, Tucson Presidio State Historic Park up 30%, you know, month to month from year to year. So everything's looking good. They all weren't positive, but it's bouncing back slowly, much like the housing market.
Tim, before we go, we had Shirley Scott on the air yesterday talking a little bit about charter and charter changes. Most people hear this charter thing and they just roll their eyes. They're very confused about it. They don't know what the charter committee really did. I know they were deadlocked at 7-7. Somebody didn't show up because it was a 15-member board, but they were deadlocked about whether to recommend ward-only elections. Yeah. So people are so confused. Is there going to be something on the November ballot, do you think, about the charter, which goes back to the 1920s?
Yeah, I mean, I think there will be something. You know, while they did deadlock on ward-only elections, which is what I wrote about on Sunday, there are several other items relating to city finance, the mayor's powers, and other things that the Charter Review Committee, I think, unanimously recommended be put on the ballot. Now, the city council then has to discuss it among themselves and decide whether they want to do that. And I think a widespread belief on the council is they want to put some things on that they can get passed and not suffer another defeat at the polls for charter review. Of course, this time they don't have raising the council members' salaries, mm-hmm. and that has been discussed and considered the likely reason that charter reviews of the past have been rejected by voters.
And speaking of the November election, Richard Elias, supervisor, was on the show this week, and he says right now the bond package, as it stands, does not look like something that will go to the voters. It's going to be retooled, and there'll be road repair money, Dan Scheer, for this thing to go. Otherwise, forget it. It's not going to pass
if that
road repair stuff is not in there.
Right, and Ray Carroll's been pushing for that and been very vocal about it, and I would agree that that's what people are going to be looking for.
So are you saying that he doesn't think it'll go on the ballot this year, or that it has to be really changed from what the committee recommended?
Let me see if I can give you the recollection of what I recall him saying. And the current form, I believe he was saying, would not move forward. I got the indication that without the road repair, they're going to retool it, put some kind of road repair money in there, then it would move forward. And I don't know whether it would be this year or...
I know that a lot of people are worried for different reasons about putting it on the ballot next year because mm-hmm. They're all up for election, for one thing, and it's a huge ballot with it being a presidential election year. So
we shall see. Tom, that's going to do it. Are you about ready with some more Holly's music? I'm going to say goodbye to the gentlemen. Dan Scheer, Green Valley News, Saharita Sun, and Tim Steller, columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Tim, we'll look for your column on Sunday. Can you give us just generally, I'm not going to ask you specifics, but what will the topic area be? Do you know yet? Are you going to decide when you get back to the office after the show today?
No, I've got it decided, and it's going to relate to internet mistakes. You probably know the example I'm referring to of a Tucson man who made a big boo-boo at Chick-fil-A. He's been on But I want to take it a little broader and analyze how we as a society respond to the big mistake that a person might make. There's been many examples of this down through the years, and I'm sure I'll be guilty of one soon.
There you go. Tim and Dan, I hope both of you have a really nice Easter weekend.
Same to you, Bill. Thanks.
All right. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show with Weekend Watch.
I try, but I can't say goodbye.
Hey, honey. Welcome home. How was your trip to L.A.?
Flying out of Tucson was the way to go. I got 3 whole days of FaceTime with the board, and they liked the fact that I saved the company time and money by flying out of TIA.
Oh, honey, that's great. Sounds like your career is really taking off.
You bet. With so many daily flights to L.A., I can get there in no time at all.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Attending Pima Community College means success for you and your family at less than a quarter the cost of trade schools or four-year universities. Partnering with business leaders, Pima creates programs tailored to help you succeed in today's high-demand jobs and offers two-year associate degrees that transfer to universities nationwide. Whether your goal is a new career or transferring to a four-year college, Pima Community College can help you succeed. Call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu. Sunlink Streetcar, Sun Shuttle, Twin Peaks Interchange, Valencia Road, Houghton Road, Saharita Road, McGee Road. Just a few examples of projects funded through the Regional Transportation Authority. Since voter approval of the RTA plan in 2006, the RTA and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 570 projects to make our transportation network safer and less congested. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. Learn more at rtamobility.com. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Are you a landlord by choice or by force? Experiencing a job transfer and don't know what to do with your current house? Want to move but can't sell your current house? Hello, my name is Ken Adams, co-owner of Rincon Ventures Property Management. Rincon Ventures has a fully automated accounting process, electronic payments, and 24-hour access to your accounts. With some of the lowest rates in Tucson, Rincon Ventures has grown rapidly in this down economy. Let us show you why. Give us a call at 881-2258 right now and experience the difference. Rincon Ventures, where service is a fact, not another empty promise. 881-2258.
Time for the Weekend Watch with Matt Russell, brought to you by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson. What a great weekend getaway this makes. So much going on over there. The tour of the Gila, April 29th through May 3rd. That's a really, really big-time bicycle race. They've got the 20th annual show, the Blues Festival, featuring Taj Mahal. Lots to do. You can visit southwestnewmexico.org. That's the website listing all the great places to stay, like Bear Mountain Lodge and Bear Creek Cabins, and, of course, the many things to do in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. It is the Easter weekend, and in honor of the occasion, Matt Russell, award-winning Tucson publicist and Inside Tucson business, food, and beverage columnist. It's kind of a tradition. The Friday before Easter, he wears that silly bunny suit to Russell Public Communications.
Hopping down the bunny trail, always looking for a great meal and a great beverage, Bill. Happy Easter weekend to you.
How about a happy hour for you today?
Yeah, you know, I remember reporting on the opening of Panka about 2 years ago here on the Weekend Watch, and now the downtown hotspot has become one of the most vibrant destinations for happy hour around, and of course it's getting my call for happy hour today. Creativity is manifest across this cocktail landscape, punctuated with innovative sangrias and agave flights, which I think all pair nicely with my favorite appetizer on the menu, the roasted bone marrow with a cilantro chimichurri sauce. You know, there's no wonder why these folks have attracted national media attention. So go see what all the buzz is about for happy hour today at Panka downtown at 50 East Broadway.
Something tells me Weekend Watch has the announcement of another grand opening.
I could hardly keep up, Bill. It's true. Another restaurant just opened its doors this week. It's called Hermano's Craft Beer and Wine Bar, 220 North 4th Avenue. Now, of course, we're going to expect an impressive showcase of craft beer and premium wines at Hermano's, but the tapas-style menu really got my attention. Small plates like deviled eggs with duck confit and truffle, meatballs with orange and fennel, even hand-cut fries with a five-spice ketchup all sound like the perfect companions for some of that great beer and wine. And they've even rolled out a grilled cheese sandwich that people are starting to rave about, which is a great way to celebrate National Grilled Cheese Month, which is all month long. Hermano's is calling my name this weekend, Phil.
Oh, I love the grilled cheese. The comfort food, the comfort food. Easter brunch upon us.
Yeah, you know what? Sadly, in just a few weeks, Bill, Bluefin Seafood Bistro on Oracle and Ina, they're going to be shutting their doors. And, of course, this makes it my choice for a seafood-centric Easter brunch this Sunday, their final Easter brunch. Now, specials range from surf and turf to a seasonal fin fish, in addition to their standard Sunday brunch menu that I've always ranked near the top of my list. If you're a fan of fresh seafood like I am, Bill, don't miss Bluefin's last Easter brunch this Sunday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m.
How about the column this week?
Our friends over at the Hacienda del Sol have scheduled a wine dinner on April the 12th, which features the work of one of the best-known women in the wine industry today. And I take you on a tour of the menu, course by course, and wine by wine in this week's edition of Inside Tucson Business. Just delicious.
Have a wonderful Easter weekend, Matt.
Happy Easter, Bill. Thanks.
The Buckmaster Show, a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, wholly responsible for its content. On behalf of our team here at KVOI, Tom Fairbanks, Ed Alexander, Ray Allen, my executive assistant, Rosemary Brandt, I am Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful and a safe weekend, and reminding you, if you need any automobile repairs, Mike Emery and the team at Perfection Auto Works, perfectionautoworks.com. Have a great weekend.